Good evening, everyone. We're going to begin in just 1 minute. Okay, just 30 more seconds and then we'll start. All right. Good evening, everyone watching on Zoom, watching on Facebook. Great to be back. This is the final of the series for this term, Shmooze with my father, and we thought we would end it off with a bang, as they say, with a very exciting topic of parenting and grandparenting from a personal perspective. So, this should be exciting. And if anybody has a question, whether you're on Zoom, whether you're on Facebook, feel free to comment and join the conversation. So, hold on 1 second, everyone. There we go. Okay. So let's get right into it. Let's get right into this conversation about parenting and grandparenting. It should be very interesting. So I guess the first question is, did you train to be a parent? Meaning, did you enter into parenting with a philosophy? Do you think parents should train before they become parents? You know, every other job, generally speaking, people get training, people study. So the question is, should parenting be, parenting is a big job, parenting is complicated, it's difficult. So did you go for training? Did you come to parenting with a certain philosophy, or did you try to work it out? By the time you get to the sixth one, hopefully you worked it out by then. You're saying you're still on mute. Let's try it now.
Yeah. Okay. You know, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess getting parenting right. What number are you? Number three. Yeah, not too bad. I suppose I got some things right by you. Anyway, great to be here again, and good to end off the term with this with this topic. So. Yeah, so the question was, should people enter parenting with training? Or did I enter with a philosophy? No. Should parents enter with training? Yes. Do they? No. So that's the answer to your question. However, I will say that one thing I was blessed with at least Hashem gave me the idea that, although I didn't have any clue what I was doing when I became a parent, but he did give me the idea, and I think this is crucial, jokes aside, that at least people should want to learn on the job. In other words, they should want to ask, they should want to go to parenting sessions, they should want to read books, they should want to talk to other people, and they should at least explore, at least want to learn about parenting. I don't think it's actually real. I mean, I made a joke before when I said people should go in with training, they should, although that won't help, because out of a bit, when you train for something that you've never done and you're not doing, it's very difficult. The best training is when you're doing it already, but it needs to start early. And it needs to be ongoing, completely, all the years, ongoing.
So you're still training?
Yeah, you were just like another one of the experiments, that.
Every kid is an experiment. Okay, I hear you. So let's get right into it. It's more detailed. And we'll get into what your parenting philosophy is now, because I'm sure, six kids later, I'm sure you have somewhat of an idea of what you're doing. Let's get right into the other side of it. What are the single biggest mistakes, in your view, that parents make And what was your biggest mistake as a parent? Let's.
Okay, I'll answer the first question. The second question you'll answer, okay? What was my single biggest mistake? How's that for a deal?
Why not?
Okay, so I think the single biggest mistake that parents make is that they want to create molds, certain molds. They have an idea of what a child should look like, and that's the mold that they're going to do. That's what they're going to create. It's called cloning type parenting. In other words, they want to create clones of themselves, and that never works. Now, it's very, very clear, and this is, I think, an important point, that as parents, we do have a responsibility, and I think we've talked about this before, to guide our children in the values that we want them to follow in. In other words, they need to have values, and they don't have a choice. It's not like we let children grow up how they want and choose their own values. No, it's our responsibility to set the value system for them. Whatever our moral compass is, whatever our values are, in a Jewish context, it's often the Torah and its principles and so on. That has to be the foundation, and that we have, just like you wouldn't give a choice to your child whether they cross the road with looking or don't looking. That's not up for discussion, nor the values. However, how they apply those values, how they live those values, there's so many different ways that it can be manifested. And that depends on the person's philosophies, a person's personality, a person's strengths and weaknesses. Everything's so different. Rabbi Twersky, in his parenting book, I've read a couple of parenting books on the way. In his parenting book, he says a beautiful thing. He says that the first thing parents need to understand is that their children are not nachas machines. We don't have children so that we should have nachas. We have children as a responsibility that we should bring them up and educate them and guide them and inspire them to the best of our ability in the right way. What's best for living with those values and what's best for them in terms of how they express and live those values.
It's interesting. We were just discussing this morning, not about this actually, because this is actually quite spontaneous, just so everyone should know, relatively speaking. But we weren't discussing this. A thought just came to me. There's a famous saying from Chazal, from our sages. It's a pasuk, right?
Yeah, it's a pasuk.
Yeah, it's a verse. Yeah, sorry, it's a pasuk. So the pasuk says, educate the child al pi darko, according to his way. And it's usually brought as a reference for what you're just saying, like every child's different and you have to sort of educate them al pi darko, according to sort of their path. But you sort of see both things here, actually. He says, chanoich lanar, educate them, but al pi darko. In other words, it's not saying, let the child be whatever the child wants, because I believe, we're parents. Parents have responsibility to educate, but in that education itself, educate them al pi darkoi, according to each specific way. Is that sort of what you're saying?
100%.
And I'll just add one more thing.
The biggest mistake that I make, I'll let you answer that question.
I'm not going to answer that question, but I'm interested to hear the answer from you if you want to share it.
It's a bit personal, but I can tell you, I definitely made mistakes, lots of them.
Okay.
And I think that's a very important thing for parents to understand, that they do make mistakes, we're human beings. But the biggest mistake that anyone can, or the second biggest mistake anyone can make, is that you become defined by your mistakes. In other words, you make mistakes, you learn from them, you fix them, you move on, and you try again. Every day is a new day.
Right. And just one more thought on what you just said, that every child's different. When I was in Kollel in Melbourne, just after we got married, so I learned there for 2 years. So there's a rabbi there, his name is Rabbi Gordon, who I actually have, in terms of things to do with education, I actually learned quite a bit from him. He's a master mechanich. He's been a teacher for, a master educator. He's been a teacher for many, many years. So he told us, he used to sit with us once a week and discuss education. So he told us a very funny story, which I think is very profound. He said that someone once came to a rabbi or to a therapist and says, I don't understand. One of my children didn't turn out properly. I have 14 children and I educated each of them exactly the same. Why did this one not turn out right? So it says that's exactly the problem. They educated each one exactly the same, right? So I guess we have to realize that every child is different. Let's get into an interesting question. Sorry, you about to say something?
No.
Which I don't know what you would answer to this, and I don't think it's a politically correct question, but it's an interesting question, and I'm interested to hear what you would say about it. How do you look at the difference between the roles of a father and a mother? I guess you can answer what you see the role of a father is. One day we'll get my mother on this. I've been trying. Everyone should just know we're working on it. It's a work in progress. It will happen. But how do you see the difference? I mean, you know, if God created it, that every person has a father and a mother, hopefully, there's obviously a reason for that, right? And men and women are different. I know that's not necessarily politically correct to say, but obviously they're equal in terms of their value, et cetera, but they are different in nature, generally speaking. So how do you see the difference between a father and a mother? And sort of how do you see your role different than a mother's role?
Okay, so I think there's fundamental differences, but before we get to that, I think let me just highlight something very important, and that is, before we go into the potential differences between the father and the mother, and by the way, there are differences, and those differences are not always necessarily from the father and the mother. In other words, sometimes the father plays a more motherly role, the mother plays a more fatherly role. That's all true. But before we get there, I think it's really important for parents to understand, that's our philosophy, that they need to be actually on the same page. So in terms of values, in terms of direction, they actually really need to talk about, you know, it's brought down the name of many great tzaddikim, and the two that come to mind is the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, and also I once saw the name of the Chafetz Chaim, that every single day parents should set aside time to think about and to reflect on the education of their children. It's a very profound thing. In other words, not something just you decide what to do and that's it. People actually have to talk about it, think about it, reflect. And I think part of that reflection is a discussion that takes place offline between father and mother, between parents, about, you know, making sure they're on the same page, because they don't always agree. But to the child, they do need to agree, because although there could be a little bit of difference between father and mother, but the messages need to be clear, because one thing that is detrimental to children is lack of certainty, lack of clarity, and mixed messages. So that's a really, really bad thing. I mean, if it happens once in a while, it's not a disaster, but it is a problem. And therefore, it's really important to be the same. Having said that, there's no question that there's certain things that come more from a father, something that comes from a mother. In most cases, again, not always in that order, or not always exactly in that particular context, but there's different aspects of parenting. There is a sort of motherly love, nurture. Let's put the word nurture. I think nurturing is something which is very specific to mothers. They do it like no one else can do it. I've noticed my own children, you know, my children came home from school. We could both be home. The child runs to the mother first. On the other occasion that I've intercepted and said hello to one of my children first, there's normally the question is, where's mommy? So, you know, there's a certain nurture that just like after a day at school, you know, you want to just run to your mother's arms kind of thing. There's a kind of more instructive, maybe structured sort of educational guidance comes from the father. So yes, it's different and they're both important. They both need to be there. I think people shouldn't shy away from it, whether it's politically correct sounding or not. The fact is that there's a certain nurturing that does definitely come from mothers. There's a certain structure that often comes from fathers, and they complement each other and they work well. They work well, very well together, and it's a great combination. And it's there for a purpose.
And just sort of to apply that to Jewish education for a second, how would you apply that there, the difference in the role of a mother and a father?
I mean, it's very interesting. Again, these roles are not specific, and not necessarily the father has to do his role always and the mother her role. But it is interesting that if you look in the commentaries in the halachic description of how chinuch, how education of children goes in terms of observance of mitzvot and learning Torah and so on and so forth, you will see a very fascinating thing. There's actually a discussion, there's different opinions with regard to this, but one of the conclusions is that the father's mitzvah, the father's responsibility, let's put it that way, is instruction, to educate, to teach. The mother's obligation is to nurture and to create a culture. Like the culture of the home, you can say what you want, but the culture of the home is created by the mother in most cases.
Some people are lucky to have both, by the way. I personally used to learn with my mother also. One of my best memories actually was, sorry?
Your mother can do both.
In fact, actually, I would probably say I've learned with her more than I learned with you in terms of like learning with the book. As you say,
I delegated it to others.
That's right. I must say one of my best memories, Friday night, you know, sometimes we make Kiddush a little bit later on Friday night, sort of a whole halachic idea, which we're not going to get into now. So I used to come home a little bit later from shul. And remember, I used to learn with mommy. That was one of my, and I was talking when I was 12, 13 years old. One of my best memories, but that's, I'm particularly lucky to have a scholarly mother as well. But I think that's definitely true. You know, I'll share with you an interesting thought that I just heard recently. It actually has to do with the Haggadah, the Haggadah, which we say on Pesach. You know, there's four sons, right? Four children, four sons. The smart one, the wicked one, the simple one, and the she'enu yedei lishol, the one who doesn't know how to ask. So it's an interesting thing. And if you look at the one who doesn't know how to ask, it says, at Pesachloi, you should open up for him. In other words, he doesn't know how to ask. So you have to engage with him. You have to. And the interesting thing, at is feminine, is lashon nekevah, right? So I saw an interesting thought that the other three sons, and you know, all these three sons, really, all these four sons exist within one child. It's different stages of life and different aspects of life. And all the other three, the father and the mother can do. In other words, it's not uniquely to the mother, but she'eni yedei lishol means when a child doesn't know how to ask yet. In other words, when you're just laying down the foundation, when you, as you said, creating the culture of the home, that's unique to the mother. That only the mother could do. That's at psachloi. So that's a beautiful,
very good.
A beautiful thought. Okay, so here's an interesting question, which I think it sort of covers a few aspects. And you mentioned before, every parent makes mistakes, right? Now, the unfortunate fact is that a parent's mistakes affects the children, right? And if a parent makes a lot of mistakes, then that this part is not a personal question. This is just in theory question.
Sure. Now,
that could definitely affect a child. Many people are traumatized from their parenting, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess the question is a person defined by that? And does everyone parent the way they were parented? So do you parent the same way your father parented you? And in general, if someone had a very traumatic upbringing for whatever reason, is that an excuse? Does that define their life from there on onwards? And as a parent, if I make a mistake, should I feel like I've destroyed my child's life forever? Can that affect, you know, is there, it's all very nice to say, you know, don't make a mistake the next time, but maybe that's define them forever, so to speak. So there's a lot of questions in there. So
there are four questions there. And to every question, the answer is yes and no. So let me explain. Can you affect your child? Yes, you can. And that's why they say the formative years, I think it's about till seven or something, is the really most important years of parenting, because that's when you lay the foundations and the relationship. Does that mean it defines the child? Does that mean it's an irreparable mark or stain or damage if you make a mistake? No, of course not. Relationships can always be repaired. Things can always be channeled and so on and so forth. Is a person always affected by the parenting? No. Does it have an effect? Yes. In other words, we have a fundamental Jewish principle. Let's just put it that way first, okay? And the fundamental Jewish principle is that there are many things that shape a human being, many things that affect the personality of a human being, nature and nurture, their DNA, the day of the week they're born, the hour that they're born in, the personality of the parents, the parenting style, the friends, the environment, the country, the town, and the list goes on, right? That's the Talmud talks about this a lot. All of that is true. All of that affects a person and molds a person. But none of it defines the person, none of it, and a person is not bound by any of it, right? People who consider themselves completely messed up because of the bad parenting that they received, that's victimhood. That's becoming a victim, and that's a great prison. In the recent book that we're discussing on a Thursday morning, The Gift by Edith Eger, there's a whole chapter on that about moving from being a victim to being a survivor. In other words, you know, but to do that, one has to reflect, one has to think. In other words, many people live a life on autopilot. It's like mindless living. Then you probably will carry with you, even though, you know, you sort of made a decision you won't, but you will carry with you a lot of the stuff that you received as a childhood, and that will carry through. It will go to the next generation without a question. But when a person stops and thinks, what are the things that they learned that were positive? What are the things they have to let go of? And let go of, you don't do in 5 minutes. It takes a lot of thinking, because we are affected. We shouldn't undermine the impact that our parents do have on us when we are young children. So that's a problem you have to deal with. But nevertheless, we are not bound by any of it. We can, with thinking, with learning, with talking to others, with reflecting and really thinking, we can know what to hold on to and what to let go. Also, things change. Even a person had a very good parenting. I had, thank God, I was brought up by two wonderful parents. Do I parent the same as my father? No, not completely. I received amazingly solid and foundational principles and values from my father, which I tried to pass on to my children. But he lived in a particular generation. He lived in a particular time. Not everything that worked then was old school kind of stuff, which not sure works today. It just, just by default of the generation that we're on, some of it does. Some of it does work, and some of it is eternal and timeless, but some of it doesn't. And some of it has to be rejigged a little bit and reworked. So yeah, yes and no.
So maybe talk to that for a little bit in terms of old-fashioned parenting versus modern parenting. First of all, just a more theoretical question and then more a practical question. Do you think that the generation is different because parents have parented different, or parents parent different because the generation is different? What's the cause and what's the effect here?
No, I get that. It's a very good question. It's a vicious cycle. Things are different, meaning from outside. The temptations are different. The challenges are different. The exposure is different. We live in a generation today that children know more than their parents for the first time in history. In terms of technology and lots of other things, they are exposed to things that we would never, ever be exposed to. So you've got to deal with that, right? However, at the same time, we shouldn't give in to what I call the pendulum theory, the pendulum syndrome, where you go from one extreme to another and you say, today we have to sort of nurture. Nurture is a good thing, but we have to sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? We have to pamper, you say, right? Well, pamper children because, we don't want to turn them off and we have to answer all their questions. There's some very good old-fashioned principles which are Torah principles, and they're timeless and eternal. We have to teach discipline. We have to teach self-discipline. We have to teach self-control. We have to teach surrender. We have to teach that not every question you answer to, especially when children are very young. At the same time, we cannot be as dismissive as parents in the older generation used to have the luxury of being able to do sometimes, which I don't think we have the luxury of to do today, because there's so many other avenues that children could go and get answers that you don't want them to get. And therefore, we need to, it's like exposure to tech. We can't just say no to everything. We can't just pretend and sweep things under the carpet. There's just certain things that doesn't work like that today. So, like Dr. Pelkovic says, we cannot isolate. We have to inoculate. I mean, a certain thing we just have to. When a child asks a question, not necessarily we have to give them the answer that they want, but we certainly have to, I think nowadays more than before, listen more, be more attentive, pick up on signals more, and engage more in conversation. Does that mean that we cannot sometimes say, listen, this is what I asked you to do and that's it, and there's no why? Yes, we can, and that's a good thing, especially when children are very young. It's a good training. But
I've actually seen articles written, I have no idea by who, saying that you should never say no to your child without saying why, and never say because I said so. I assume that you don't agree with that, at least from the way that I've, at least from my experience. If you can explain why. Why is it that you don't say why?
Do you self-damage?
No.
How many times did you hear as a child that me say because I said so?
Many times.
Okay, so that's it. Now.
Yeah, but what's the reason for that? What's the?
Because we have a principle in Judaism called Kabbalat Ol, right? The relationship with our parents also molds the relationship we have with God. It is, as human beings, and we all need to do that, by the way. We do things because God said so, we don't know why, right? There's a whole body of mitzvot called chukim, which are mitzvot that God gave us, which don't have a reason, or at least we don't know the reason. And God said, do it. You know why? Because I said so. Right? And that's a good training, because we need to know our own limitations. We need to know that we are finite people. We need to know that our intellect is limited. Right? We need to know that it is the height of arrogance to think that I'm only going to do things that make sense to me. Who am I? I'm just a little human being. To us, I'm everything, and my intellect is everything, and so on. But when we understand the relationship between us and God, for example, God is infinite. God is way beyond. And even within human beings, there are certain people that are so much cleverer, more experienced, and deeper, and so on and so forth, right? So it's an incredibly critical training for a person, for a human being to have. To know that there's a modern disease of people saying, I need to only do things that talk to me, that I feel comfortable with. No. That is bad living. We need to know how to grow. Grow means we need to sometimes submit to things that are beyond us. And one of the ways that we are trained to do that is from a very young age, where we do tell children, I ask you to do this because I said so. Now, it's okay then to go back to the child and say, you know, remember what I asked you to do yesterday? Let me explain it to you. That's okay too, right?
Mm.
But there should not be an expectation, especially when a child is very young. Now, it's when that's messed up a little bit, when a child comes when they're 13 and a teenager, and you say, because I said so, it doesn't always work. That's true. I agree with that, right? There's certain things you do initially and you hope they're going to work. And there's certain things that you have to change slightly. It's also a mistake parents make sometimes. When you see that it's not working, you need to sometimes rejig. And also, this message that you do it because I said so, there's another thing that needs to be understood. And I think maybe that's part of the, maybe a little bit of a modification we do in our generation. It doesn't always have to be harsh. The message sometimes has to be, you need to listen to me because I'm in charge here. It doesn't have to be a harsh message. I used to use a line you probably would remember, particularly with one of your siblings, which one I'm sure named nameless, who I used to do it in a humorous way. I would say, well, what? So, you know, they would say, why do I have to do this? I would say, well, or like, I don't think I have to do this. You know, that's one of the things kids say sometimes, teenagers, I don't need to do this. And I would say, well, as long as you don't pay rent yet, you actually do. So, you know, if you'd like to start paying rent, we can.
So I want to continue something else. This is actually a very interesting discussion. So I just want to ask one more question on this. You know, obviously a critical aspect of education is building up a child's self-esteem and making them feel like they're valuable and they're important. Because, you know, I just want to sort of ask you to clarify what you just said. You know, you just said that, you know, who are we? We're small human beings and we don't really understand everything and therefore we need to submit and sometimes do things that we don't understand. How do you balance that with building up a child's self-worth? That no, you are important and you do have to, and therefore by definition, if you're important, so your mind's important and your feelings are important, how do you balance that?
That's a great question. Before I answer that, let me just go back a second, right? Another very, very important thing, and it leads into to the answer to this question. When I say that it's important, I just want to clarify something very, very important. When we say we have to educate children to be disciplined and to sometimes listen, even if you don't, if they don't understand and so on and so forth, but it has to be part of a whole equation. In other words, if all I ever interact with my child is give them bark orders and tell them to listen, nothing's going to happen. It won't. It'll be very bad. It'll have a very bad effect, right? Part of it has to be building up a relationship, a lot of love, spending a lot of time, discussing with them, learning with them, telling them stories, eating dinner with them, whatever the case is. There has to be a very healthy, nurturing and happy environment in a home, right? So when I say when you give an instruction, you teach child to listen, even sometimes where they don't understand, that's very healthy and critical, but it's got to come in context with, in other words, it's discipline and love, right? You can't have one without the other. It has to be both. Which leads in a little bit to the answer to your question. Building up self-esteem does not mean that you are the best person and the smartest in the whole world. That's actually a very bad message to children and to human beings generally, right? It means building up self-esteem means that you have an intrinsic value, right? You have a soul, especially in a Jewish context. You have a soul. That soul is connected with God, which, by the way, makes you part of a much, much, much bigger reality, right? Humility actually makes me more important, not less important. When I know that I am nothing in terms of being an independent human being, I'm just a speck in the infinite reality of God, so to speak, right? That means... But I'm not an independent speck. I'm actually created by God. I'm created in the image of God. I have a soul that's connected to God. So my finiteness is if I look at me as me alone, but my finiteness of who I am, but being part of a much greater reality to which I submit and I surrender, which is where discipline comes into it, makes me a greater person, not a smaller person.
That's great. All right, just to remind everyone on Facebook and on Zoom, if you want to comment a question, please do. Happy to discuss anything to do with parenting and grandparenting. So we'll get to grandparenting in a moment. Just two more questions on parenting. How is your relationship with your children's school? And what I mean by that is, when you send, I mean, this is not about any specific school, as we never discuss anything specific here, but generally speaking, if you send your child to a school, you're probably not going to agree with the school at least some of the time, right? You know, they have one way of educating and maybe you have a different way of educating, or maybe their values are not 100% in line with you. So if the school taught your children, for example, something that you disagreed with, if if there was an interaction, I mean, this is many questions in one question, but if there was interaction between a teacher and your child, and in your mind, you thought actually that your child was right, how did you deal with that?
Ooh, you have an hour and a half? Okay, I'm very passionate about this discussion. This is a very, very important discussion. So let me try and summarize it. Number one, parents always need to know, and I think it's such an important question, this, because, you know, there's so much that goes on between parents and schools. First of all, parents should never rely on school for the education of their children. In other words, you know, simply put, it's a mitzvah in the Torah to educate your own children. We delegate part of it to the school, but the responsibility lies with parents. School is not there to bring up our children. School is there to help us with a part of the education that we can't do ourselves, or don't have the time to do ourselves, or don't have the knowledge or skill to do ourselves, right? So therefore, one has to be supportive of the school. One has to not always agree with the school. That's okay. And being responsible for your child's education also means that you have to be the advocate for your child's education. You have to go and fight for your children. But two things need to happen if you want it to be successful. Children need clarity. Children cannot always pick up on nuances. Children, you need to support the school, especially in front of your children. Children have to know that they always have to be completely respectful to their teachers. And I think you probably remember this very well. There was, in our home, there was no such thing as being disrespectful to a teacher, whatever the case is. However, that doesn't mean that I didn't have meetings with the school. It doesn't mean that I didn't disagree with the school. But even disagreeing with the school, you need to build an alliance. In other words, parents generally that walk into a school and declare war, no one wins. They might be right, but they never be happy. And I always say you got to choose to be happy rather than being right. Right? You got to walk in and talk to the school and say, listen, we're a team. We're a partnership. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the hard work that you're doing. But I need to stand up for my child. So can we please discuss this and come to some sort of conclusion? Maybe you can help me. I can help you. We can support each other. Work out something. Because I can tell you that in my years of being a principal of a school, right? Role reversal here. I was also a principal of a school, don't forget. And thank God I have a lot of nachas from a lot of my students. And from those students, and I, you know, there were a lot of students that I can, you know, thank God I was given the blessing of making a big difference in their life. However, I can tell you that the ones that I did make a difference to most of the time, and we did some really great things, but most of the time, it was children of parents who supported me, didn't always agree with me, but supported me and worked with me. And it was a great partnership. But yeah, so sometimes, I mean, there are times, and I know you know this, there are times that there was value, not just strategy issues, but value issues. Mm. Sometimes, you know, children, schools teach things to children which are really counter to the values of parents. You have to be very careful to that and choose that very carefully. But sometimes you do have to sit down to a child and say, listen, this is your school. You have to respect everything the teacher says, but we actually don't subscribe to that. We live this particular area. We actually do a bit differently. That's okay, as long as that was respect.
Mm. Okay. So just to end the parenting part of this discussion, and once again, anyone can chime in here, and then we'll get to grandparenting. So I guess let's just end up with a more general question. If I would ask you to sum up your parenting strategy, you know, you've parented six children, you've helped a lot of people. In a few sentences, you know, as the famous story goes, when the convert came to Hillel, you know, tell me the whole Torah on one foot. If someone were to ask you, tell me your parenting strategy on one foot, how would you answer that question?
I'll say three things. One is that parents need to know that being a parent means a lot of personal growth. The reason I say that is because parenting, every relationship, but particularly parenting, cannot exist or cannot succeed without a huge dose of two opposite things within our personality. And that's called, in the words of Kabbalah, chesed and gevurah. We have to be able to show tremendous love, unconditional acceptance, unconditional love, warmth, interaction, generosity, kindness, closeness, bonding, and so on and so forth. And yet at the same time, be able to set boundaries, create discipline in a positive way, and create limits, and sometimes be strict. Chesed and gevurah have to work together. The one without the other normally is the cause of many, many, many problems. Secondly, culture in the home. More important than rules is the culture. It's It's how we live our values. It's how the feel in the home. Is it positive? Is it happy? And the way we want to live, that's what kids feel. We live our values. In other words, the sort of warmth, the culture in the home. And that culture comes with the third thing of clear messaging, consistent messaging, clear messaging. Not that you can't be flexible, you could, but messages have, mixed messages are very bad for children. Messages have to be clear. I think those are probably the three most important things.
Okay. Now let's get to grandparenting.
Ah, that's much easier.
That's So you've been a grandparent for 9 years, 10 years? How old?
Almost 10 years.
So let's start off with this. How do you see the role of a grandparent? How would you sort of sum that? You know, obviously there is a role. I mean, you know, it's not just a biological fact that your child's now had a child. There's a reason why families tend to try and live together, if that's possible. I must say, by the way, I actually grew up, I mean, I had grandparents alive, very distinguished grandparents and grandparents that I learned from a tremendous amount, but from afar. I mean, when I was growing up, I saw my grandparents maybe once in 2 years. You know, in those days, people didn't travel that much.
In the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, when I went away from home, I saw them much more often. But when I was very young, now, I mean, thank God my children have all their grandparents alive. I know that's a big gift. And I thank God for that. And in very close proximity in Sydney and Melbourne. I mean, although Melbourne has been sort of cut off the past few months, but thank God the border's opening. So that is a tremendous gift, but there's definitely a role. And I see that. I almost envy my children that they had what I didn't have to a certain degree. How do you define that role? Or is there a definition?
So I'm not sure. I haven't given it a tremendous amount of thought, but I just reflect back to my grandfather when I grew up. I had a very special grandfather in South Africa. And I just got a tremendous amount of warmth from him. And like, it's in a way like it's the opportunity to get pure love. You know, children get sort of unconditional pure love. Like it's, you know, and I think that's a role that parents have to, that grandparents have to think about. They don't have to. They have the luxury of not being the policeman, of not being the one that enforces discipline, which all the things we said before is true, and it's all very, very important. But grandparents don't really need to do that, and they can set an example. They can give love. They can teach. They can impart experience, but kind of from a different viewpoint, a different angle.
So let's get to a few, maybe a little more detailed, maybe. Should a grandparent try to educate their grandchildren, number one, if you have a certain value to impart in your grandchildren? And let's ask them a little more of a detailed way, a more specific way. What happens if a grandparent has a different perspective than a parent? So if you see your children educating their children in a way which you disagree with, how do you see the role of the grandparent there? Should the grandparent...
Self-control. Very simple. It's not your child.
Sorry?
Not your child. Not your responsibility.
Right. So you're saying a grandparent should never...
I think a grandparent can educate. What I mean to say is, it depends what you mean by educate. I think there's lots of stories and lots of values and lots of things that grandparents can impart. And when grandkids come to visit, I'm very conscious of that. I mean, I think there's something special about... you know, you see me try to do this sometimes when a grandparent sort of asks a question to a child, a grandchild, like, what are you learning? And, oh, that's so nice. And having giving the opportunity to a grandchild to communicate to the grandparents, like what they're feeling or what they're learning. And I say a joke, you know, my grandparents and grandchildren have a very good relationship. They have a common enemy. You know?
That's
just
right.
Just kidding. No, that's something very, very beautiful in that relationship. And that's what a grandparent, and that's the contribution a grandparent can make. As soon as a grandparent becomes a parent, the child loses out. He doesn't need three parents or four parents. He needs two parents. And the relationship between young children and parents can be beautiful. But, you know, the beauty of, I think maybe let's put it this way. The beauty of the relationship between a very young child and a parent, often a child only appreciates later. Right? Because at the end of the day, the parents have to run the house. And you're not always, parents and children don't always agree, so to speak, right? But the opportunity for the relationship between a child and a grandparent is that pure love, that and that's a beautiful gift that if a child can have that. So they shouldn't mess it up by becoming a parent, I think.
Right. I mean, although if you think about it, you know, you've educated whoever the grandparent is, you know, they've had experience, they've been through it. And then you have this 25-year-old who doesn't know what they're doing. You know, it must be, you know, it's an interesting question. Like, is that difficult for you to watch? Like, I mean, to say it's like, you know, the mistakes they're making, because you maybe made the same mistakes, but you've had the experience enough to fix them up. Do you not intervene? Do you not comment? Do you not suggest?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think you're doing a pretty good job, but yeah, you do see things like that sometimes. But I think that first of all, I think a grandparent, if they have a right relationship with their child, with their own child, or was the parent of the other's grandchildren, sometimes can have a conversation, and sometimes they can be asked advice, and if they ask advice, they should give it, right? Having said that, you know, there's different ways to sometimes suggest things. Also, I think, I mean, I just want to touch on something else. I think, you know, some people ask about, because I've had grandparents ask me this, like, when children come to their house and they just do whatever they want and that kind of thing, you know, should they just be quiet? So that's a good balance you have to, I mean, obviously you want your grandchildren to come, but I don't think there's anything wrong, you know, for a grandparent to say, listen, I'm not parenting you, but just this house, this is what we do things like, you know, or, you know, certain things, there are certain boundaries, and that's okay. I mean, that doesn't matter with imbalance. But, you know, I think that those boundaries have to be very clear. Otherwise, it messes up the whole relationship, and it messes up the advantage of being a grandparent, and the child loses that.
Yeah. Okay, so here's an interesting question. Who decides how involved the grandparent should be? What I mean to say is this. You know, some people, they use their parents as babysitters for their children. Some grandparents feel guilty. They have to say yes. Do they not have to say yes? Like, who sort of sets the boundaries in this relationship?
Those two separate questions. Who sets the boundaries of how involved the grandparent should be in the children's education? That's the parents of the child. You have children, it's your responsibility. You decide who you want to invite into the journey, who you don't want to invite in. That's okay. In terms of abusing the help that's available, so to speak, yeah, and I've heard stories, I mean, horror stories, some people have spoken to me about it, about like the just parents just want to dump their kids with their grandparents and use them and then don't want any involvement from them, and they kind of feel used. That's upon the grandparent to be strong enough to create positive and healthy boundaries. I mean, that's nothing to do with parenting or grandparents. It's got to do with general human relationships. We should be very generous. We should always help other people generally, especially our own children. We should also know our own limits. We should also know, you know, our own balance of priorities. Some grandparents work, some grandparents don't work. Some grandparents are very, very busy, some grandparents aren't. And I think grandparents have to be comfortable enough to have an open conversation with their children and say, listen, I'd love to help you. I can do it once a week or twice a week, but I can't do it every day, or I can't do it now, or I can't do it tonight, or I can't do it this Shabbos, or whatever the case is.
Okay. If anybody has any questions, please chime in. I guess let's just sort of touch on more general questions here. While we're talking about grandparenting, what is the thing, I guess, that you, from your own perspective, as a grandchild, benefited the most from your relationship with your grandparents?
So, you know, I think there's, I mean, if you want to know a lesson, I mean, I often think about being a grandparent and I think about my grandfather. So I'm very lucky. My grandfather was a very special individual. I'll be honest, I didn't have such a close relationship with my grandmother just because she wasn't that type of person. But I mean, and she was also, I'm not, actually more importantly, but even from a very young age, she wasn't that well. And I think she couldn't, you know, she came to us rather than we going to her most of the time, that kind of thing. My grandfather was a bit different, but I mean, he was very, very giving. And the amazing thing about him was that his name was Rabbi Alloy. Some people would even remember the name. The main thing was that I only realized later that he was an incredibly busy human being. And yet when he came to our house and he spent time with us, it was like nothing else existed. He had incredible time. I think that's a very important thing. I think grandparents need to obviously, you know, run their own lives and do their own thing and set the boundaries that we said before. But at the same time, the love that grandparents can give to grandchildren is very, 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 very important and very valuable. And grandparents need to know that they need to give time and they need to be able to to focus on the grandchildren when they're there and really, you know, talk to them and build up a relationship with them. And I think it's more as the grandchildren get older, even like, you know, when they're 1 or 2 years old, that's more the cuteness, and that's more the grandparents benefit from it more than the grandchildren. But as they get older, then there's a lot of benefit that the grandchildren can have from interacting with their grandparents. When I was bar mitzvah, I'm not saying every parent can do this, but when I was bar mitzvah, my grandfather took me overseas for 4 weeks. 2 weeks to New York to see the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and then we traveled a little bit else in the States, 1 week in Europe, 1 week in Israel. I remember it very, very clearly, and it's probably one of the most profound times of my life. We spoke, he told me stories, we had fun together. It was the most amazing, amazing experience.
Mm. Wow. You're more than welcome to take my kids on a trip whenever you want.
I said it was when they were older.
That's right. Just an interesting question, an interesting thought. You know, people are saying, you know, children have it more difficult nowadays in a way, meaning to say there are more challenges nowadays growing up. What would you say are the unique challenges of parents nowadays that you as a parent didn't necessarily have? And also, what do you see as the sort of the new challenge that parents have in being effective parents? And good parents.
So I think the two greatest challenges is technology, number one, and everything that goes with it. Screen time. I'm not even talking about bad material. I'm talking about even just the obsession with screen time, and parents fall into the temptation of using screen time as a babysitter. It's one of the worst things they can do for their kids. Yet it's very, very difficult because kids want it and they gravitate to it. And it takes a lot of strength to create those boundaries, especially as they get older. And the second is that we live in a world of tremendous expectation, where like food is so unbelievably available, unhealthy stuff, everything, and just parents find it difficult sometimes to create those boundaries. And I think that sort of to create that culture where to take away the entitlement, to take away the instant gratification, to take away all that kind of stuff is very, very hard. It's much harder as a parent today than it was previously.
Wow. All right. I guess we'll leave it at that for tonight. If anyone has any questions, you're more than welcome to ask it. Now would be a good time. If not, I wish everybody a very good night. Thank you for joining us over the past few weeks. I've enjoyed this. Hope you have. And there are many more shiurim and programs happening over the next few weeks. At Bina, in a few months' time, we're having the summer learning program that's starting the 28th of December this year. 25th of December is on a Friday, so we're going to start on the Monday. That's going to be a week-long in-person program, actually, not only on Zoom, so stay tuned for that. And you can go on our website, bina.com.au, B-I-N-A, for all the other shiurim programs that happen.
Now, can I just maybe suggest something as well? That I mean, in term one, hopefully we'll do a couple more of these. If people have ideas of things that they think me and Levy could discuss, then we're more than welcome to take suggestions.
For sure. All right, everyone. Have a good night.
All the best, everyone.
Summer.